Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. Today is Thursday, January 8th, 2009. This is podcast number 72. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is When Stock Losses Are True Stock Losses and when they are not. As is often the case, the idea for this podcast came from a thread that I saw at the bogleheads.org discussion board. And there was a fellow, I'm not going to quote from the thread, but I've mentioned on earlier podcasts, I love it when ordinary people, not experts, just ordinary investors, ask the most elementary questions about stock investing, because that's how we learn, by looking at the basics. What the big problem in stock investing today is the popularity of the passive investing model, and this model is flawed right to its core. And the problem is that the flaws are at a very fundamental level, and so they're sort of hard to root out. If you discover a mistake in somebody's work, and the mistake is the last little bit of addition they did, you can point out the problem, and the ordinary human reaction is to just go back and, you know, erase the number and put in the correct number, and it's all solved. If you make a fundamental mistake, a mistake that goes, you know, say you've been working on a calculation, some sort of mathematical formula, and you've been working on it for 10 years, and the mistake that's discovered is the very first thing you did 10 years ago, that means that all of the work of the 10 years is now discredited. You have to start over again. That's what happened with passive investing. The error that was made is at the most fundamental level. And the struggle today is not an intellectual problem of trying to find out what the error is. There's 30 years of academic research showing where the error is. But the problem is the people we refer to as experts in this field are feeling a lot of defensiveness and guilt about the errors they've made and the financial losses that they've caused as a result of those errors, the bad advice they've given. And so responding in a human way, if not a terribly productive way, they have been very reluctant to acknowledge these errors. And the struggle today is to work this out. We somehow need to get the experts on board, to get them to acknowledge their mistakes, and then all of us to move forward together. So what I really like to see is, you won't often see the experts asking these basic questions, because they're working under the assumption, and I think a lot of them sincerely believe this. One of the problems that comes up, you know, with these human reactions of guilt and embarrassment and defensiveness, is that we really can persuade ourselves that maybe we're not that wrong. Maybe we don't really have to admit the error. Maybe there's some way of looking at things. And that causes us then not to even look at the problem, to try to avoid it. And I think that's what's going on. A lot of the experts, they know on some level, they know there's something wrong. They get that much. But they don't want to know the details. They've tuned it out. So they don't talk about these basic questions very often. They like to talk about the fancy stuff, where they can show off their skills. But your everyday investor will ask these questions from time to time, and they're very important questions, and they're the questions I like to spend my time studying so we get the basics right. And you'll see a lot of people asking these questions after a big stock crash. That's when ordinary investors become alarmed and they start going back to the basics. One of the good things about suffering, I don't wish suffering on anyone. I hate to suffer. I'm a baby. I hate to suffer. But one of the things I will say is that there have been times in my life when I've suffered, and you know what I'm saying is something you'll hear a lot of other people say. I'm certainly not the only one to say this, but often when you go through times of suffering, it causes you to reflect on questions that you otherwise would ignore. And so one of the good things, I'd like people to look at the stock crash and say, what good can come of it? Instead of getting into a doom and gloom, you know, situation where things just go down, 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 what can we learn from this? And there's a lot we can learn. There's wonderful, wonderful things we can learn. And, you know, that's my saving story. My saving story, everything I learned about saving that ended up in my book, Passion Saving, came about because of a job loss that I suffered in, I believe it was 1991, is my recollection, and late 1991. And, you know, all the work I do today is a product of that. I suffered. It hurt to lose that job. And that got me studying how to save, how to manage my money, how to put together budgets. And, you know, many years later, I'm still working that same field. And what we're all going through today in the investing area, where we are all suffering, you know, acknowledgement of these huge financial losses, can lead us to a very, very, very good place in days to come, if we let it in, if we give up the defensiveness, we give up the negative emotions, and try to turn this into something positive. So, the threat at Bogleheads, the guy was asking a question. Now he was saying, you know, he was somewhat apologetic. He said, I understand timing doesn't work, and of course I don't agree with that. Certain types of timing don't work. Certain types of timing are mandatory if you want to be successful as a long-term investor. So I don't at all agree with that part of his post. But he didn't want to get in trouble. He didn't want to go against the orthodoxy. He didn't want any smear campaigns aimed at him. So he said, I understand timing doesn't work. I get that. But he said, I hear this phrase. People will say, and a lot of people are saying it today, they're saying, it's not really a loss unless you sell. Unless you sell your stocks, we've now dropped. I saw a write-up the other day that said I saw Robert Shiller address this a couple weeks ago. He said if you measure the loss going back to January of 2000, on an inflation-adjusted basis, the loss is now 60% for stockholders from 2000 through the end of 2008. But most people, when they talk about the stock crash, so it's been sort of a slow motion stock crash for for 8-9 years. But if most people, when they talk of the stock crash, they're just thinking about what happened in the past 15-16 months. If you look at that and you go to the very top and then you compare it with the very bottom, the total loss is, the number I saw was 52%, so somewhere around 50%. And some people won't go quite to the top or quite to the bottom, and they'll say it's 40%. There's all sorts of ways of measuring these things. Roughly, I think we should say 50%. So a lot of people are looking at that, and a lot of people had, you know, insanely high stock allocations as a result of advice they heard from passive investing enthusiasts. They had insanely high stock allocations. And so they lost close to 50% of their life savings. You know, if you had a 80% stock allocation and you suffered a 50% loss, you didn't lose quite 50% of your life savings, but not too far from it. And I know people who had 100% stock allocation. I really do. I know people from discussion boards that had 100% stock allocation. So those people truly did lose 50% of their life savings. Well, if you think how many years it takes to save, well, of course, it depends on how old you are, but some of these people are near retirement age. Now, some are not. But, in some cases, it may have taken people 10 years to save that amount of money, the amount that they've lost in 15 months. So the human mind, it's a devastating thing. This is something we're going to have to examine in days to come. How traumatic a loss like this is, not just financially, but emotionally. If you lost 10 years, if you're saving $5,000 a year, you know, you're adding $5,000 a year to your portfolio and you've just lost $50,000, you've lost 10 years of savings. That's like saying the last 10 years of your life, you know, there's that old saying, I have nothing to show for it. Those 10 years are over and you're not a penny closer to being financially independent than you were 10 years ago. That is hard medicine. That is hard medicine to take. And I believe in feeling the pain, you see. Part of my philosophy is I don't want people to feel bad, but I believe in reality. I believe in the reality principle. And I believe you're going to feel the pain even if you try to avoid it. You're going to feel it on some level of consciousness. I believe the thing to do is take the pain as quickly as you can and then come up with ways to overcome it. And that process begins more quickly if you take the pain up front rather than trying to avoid it. So I don't believe in trying to avoid the pain too much. And so if anything, I think it could be even worse than losing 10 years. How is it worse? Start thinking about the compounding. If you lost $50,000 and you're age, 40, you might be investing for, my mother is going to turn 92 this summer. If you're age 40, you may have your money in stocks for another 50 years. You want to, go to one of those calculators on the internet and that shows you the value of compounding returns and find out how much $50,000 would compound to over 50 years, and you'll be sick. The losses people have suffered are very, 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 very serious losses. And there are a lot of people today trying to diminish them, trying to say, oh, it's not that bad. And I'm all for cheering people up. That's good. That's healthy. But we need to cheer people up in realistic ways. We don't treat people like babies and say, oh, it didn't happen. Because if we pretend it didn't happen, we don't learn from the experience. And again, if you're age 40 and you live, you're not necessarily going to live to 90, but you might well live to 80. You certainly have a good chance of living to 70. So even if you live only to 70, that's 30 years where your money will be in stocks. And in 30 years, we're going to experience another market cycle. So we're going to see, I don't know how many more years of a secular bear market. Could be 5, 7, 10 years. Could be less than that. Then you're going to see another bull market, and then you're going to see another crash, in all likelihood, sometime in your lifetime. So you need to be prepared. If you've suffered a devastating loss now, you can't get the money back. So what you need to do is say, what can I do? One of the subtitles of my book that I considered for a while, I eventually came up with the subtitle I mentioned up front, but one of the subtitles I considered for a while is Why Stocks Let You Down and How to Make Sure It Never Happens Again. And that was a subtitle I wrote years ago, years before this stock crash, probably in 2003, 2004. I came up with that idea for a subtitle because the stock crash was inevitable. People should be asking themselves, people who believe in passive investing and are saying, I read this columnist the other day that used the word unfathomable. It was an unfathomable. The person wasn't a financial person. It was I think it was some kind of political column, or social commentary, something like that. But, the person can't be blamed for not understanding stock investing. But the person said it's unfathomable. And it's not unfathomable. People who understood the ABCs of investing, people who understood what they were talking about, and I don't understand any more than the ABCs. Please don't put me up on some pedestal. I'm some guy who posts on the internet. I report. I consider myself a reporter rather than an investing expert or stock advisor. You know, I advise in the sense that I tell people what the academic research says, and I tell them, look, I think you should try to invest rationally, not passively. So in that sense, I offer advice, but it's really a reporting function. If I could know years in advance that a stock crash was coming, then anyone could have known it, anyone who cared to do a little research. But, of course, you would need to do that research with a clear head. If you were emotionally invested in stocks, as millions were, and I'm not ridiculing them, you know, this is what happened. Then they didn't know. There certainly were millions that did not know was coming, and there were many experts that did not know was coming, but it certainly could have been known. There was no reason. There was no good reason why they did not know. So what's happening today is, now that we've suffered the losses, I believe we need to let that in and gain from it. But a lot of people are still in the stage of denial. You know, they have those five stages of grief, and I don't think I can recall them all. I know denial's one, anger's one, acceptance is one. One is compromise, you know, negotiation. I don't recall the fifth. Might be depression, but I'm not sure. We're working our way through those stages. And some people, you know, people are at different stages. But some are in the denial stage. Some are saying, oh, you know, we'll get it back. Now, some really think we're going to go back. Some think we're just going to jump right back to where we were. And that could happen to some degree. When you have a stock price drop, the size of the drop was not at all unexpected. Everyone who was familiar with the historical data knew that a price crash of at least 50% was coming, if not much more than that. But I don't think that many would have expected that it would come over a short period of time as it did. Certainly that surprised me. I would have expected it to be more gradual. You just never know. But given how telescoped it has been, it would not surprise me a great deal to see us make up some of that ground. I think that would be the worst thing that could happen, because it would encourage people in these hopes. People are having these vain hopes that they're somehow going to get the money back. And if stocks were to begin going up again, I think the best thing would be stabilization of prices. But if they were, I don't want to see us go lower. I don't think that's at all healthy. That could cause a depression, I believe. I think that's also a very bad thing. But if we start to go up too quickly, that will get people's hopes up, and it will hold off the time when we acknowledge the mistakes we've made, and that will cause another price crash down the road a few years, which will probably be worse than the one we've just gone through. So I see that as the worst of all worlds, because then we will end up even lower, not lower than today, but lower than we would have been if we saw another price drop today. In other words, there's only so low we can go today, and it all depends on emotion. There's only so low we can go. Investors will not permit us to go lower than that psychologically. But if we had another price crash of 60, 70%, you know, 3 years from now, there's almost no limit to how low we could go. You know, we would just go so low that those would be dark times. So let's all say a prayer that we do not have another price increase, another dramatic price increase anytime soon. Anyway, the point of all of that is, a lot of people today are trying to deny the losses. And one of the phrases you'll hear from passive investing enthusiasts is, oh, if you haven't sold, you haven't lost anything. You know, you'll get your money back. It's you know, buy and hold, timing doesn't work, you know, all the old marketing slogans. And this fellow was questioning that. He said, look, I believe in all the marketing slogans, but he had some reason why he lowered his stock allocation. I don't recall what it was. It doesn't really matter. But for some quirky reason, it's not really his philosophy. It just happened. And he said, so as a result, I haven't experienced any of these losses. And he said, I hear this phrase all the time. It's, you know, it's not a real loss unless you sell. But he says, I'm not sure I get it. He says, isn't it really a loss? Because since I didn't experience a loss, I have a lot more money invested in the market. It seems to me as if, you know, if I were 50% down, that would be a real loss. Now, the question is, I don't know, on one, it's almost sad. You know, it's so pathetically elementary. You know, it truly is pathetic. I'm not making fun of the guy at all. I applaud the guy for asking the question. It's a wonderful question. But if you were a man from Mars coming down to Earth and you heard somebody asking this question, you would probably be inclined to laugh at the humans. You know, people invest their retirement money in stocks and they don't know whether losses are real or not. But the truth is, we don't. Our knowledge of investing today is primitive. We don't know whether we're suffering. We truly do not know whether we've suffered a loss or not. I'm going to say that loud and clear. Stock investors today truly do not know whether they have suffered a loss or not. And that was the question this guy was asking. He said, I buy into all the marketing slogans which tell me I haven't suffered a loss. It's not a loss unless you sell. So if I had stuck with, you know, my high stock allocation, I wouldn't have suffered a loss. But I didn't stick to it for whatever reason. He had some complicated, you know, reason. I don't know what it was. And as a result, I didn't suffer loss, and it seems to me like I'm better off. Am I? He really was asking that question. Am I? And of course, the answers were revealing too, because one guy said, well, you are better off. You know, who can deny that you're better off? You've got, you know, tens of thousands of dollars more than you would have had. So obviously, this idea that it's not a loss unless you sell is absurd. It's sick. It's crazy. It's twisted. Obviously, you're better off. Obviously. But, you know, don't try to market time because you were lucky. You know, and you know, that's fair enough. You know, the guy, he wasn't really trying to market time. He didn't do this for market timing reasons. It was, you know, I don't know if he had to transfer the money. Something happened. You know, I don't know what it was. So the guy's saying, yes, of course you're better off. Now, if you think about that answer, just think about it a little bit and forget that you believe in passive investing if you do. If you think about it, what you'll see going on there is the guy who responded is saying, all right, I'll admit that the losses that the rest of us have suffered are real. You know, just for sake of argument, I'll admit it for 10 seconds. I'm going to go back to the marketing slogan, you know, 10 seconds from now, but for 10 seconds, I'll acknowledge reality. Of course, we suffered a loss. But the reason we tell ourselves this lie is because we don't want to start to think market timing's a good thing. And if we start to realize that we've suffered real losses, we'll start to believe in market timing, and oh, we're passive investors. We don't want to market time. Not that. Anything but that, please. I believe that market timing is essential to investing success, to long-term investing success. It is impossible to be a successful long-term investor without engaging in effective market timing. So says Rob Bennett. Obviously, there are some forms of market timing that don't work, but there are some that do. And you need to know the difference. And we should be educating investors as to what forms work and what forms don't work. That's the job. That's what I try to do at PassionSaving.com. I try to educate people about these basics of stock investing that the quote-unquote experts somehow, you know, left out of the story. Now, the guy suffered. You know, the people who were in stock suffered real losses. So that's my first answer to the question. The question posed in the podcast title is, you know, when stock losses are true stock losses and when they are not. You lose money in stocks, you lost money in stocks. That's very simple. That's a simple answer. But there's a better answer. There's a more advanced answer, a more true answer, I think. And the answer to this question, it goes to the whole problem of passive investing. The answer is very simple. I wish I could just give you the answer in 30 words and shut the podcast down. But I don't feel I can do that, because whenever you speak, one of the things you have to remember as a speaker is, or write, one of the things you have to remember as a writer is, you're writing in a context. You're writing in an environment. You know, if you're giving a presentation on, you know, what is my favorite Beatles song, to, you know, a group of people who are, you know, my parents' age, who are Frank Sinatra fans, you're going to have to give a different presentation than if you're speaking to a group of people that are my age that grew up listening to the Beatles, and you're going to have a third presentation to if you're giving that presentation to a group of young people today who came along many years after the Beatles. Each audience comes to the presentation with different understanding of the realities, and the same words are not going to click with these different audiences. It's possible, I think, to give a presentation to Frank Sinatra fans that would argue the merits of my favorite Beatles song is Get Back. Get Back, probably Hey Jude is probably second. I think I can make a case for those two songs to a group of Frank Sinatra fans, and I think I can make a case for those two songs to a group of young people today, people who are young today. But it wouldn't be the same presentation as I would give to a group of people who know the songs like the back of their hand, that grew up at the time I grew up. So it's the same thing when I try to answer the question, when are stock losses true stock losses? If I were speaking only to confirmed rational investors, I could give a very short presentation and everyone would get it. But I understand that most of the people listening to this podcast are people who have been listening to experts tell them about passive investing for 30 years now. And that poisons the environment. You have a hard time hearing what I'm trying to say. So I need to sort of circle back and approach, you know, and try to focus in on certain things. And it becomes a complicated sort of process. So one of the problems with passive investing in general is you'll often hear me say, this came up on the Goon Central board this morning, my friend Schroeder was saying, he says, Rob, you know, I at the blog today, I had another email from Michael Kitsis, or I think it was an email from me to Michael. And he says, Rob, you know, you've been posting a lot of this correspondence with Michael. You say here, Rob, at Goon Central, you say passive investing is the biggest get-rich-quick scheme in history. And I believe that. And he says, Rob, you know, if Michael heard you say that, he would think you were insane. Now, I don't think that's true, because I've had a pretty long correspondence with Michael, and I don't think I've ever said exactly those words, but I've said things pretty darn close. I don't hold back. I don't disguise my beliefs when I'm talking with Michael or Scott Burns or you know, Bill Bernstein or any of the other experts that I've corresponded with. I don't start off the discussion usually saying, you know, I think stock investing is the biggest get-rich-quick scheme in history. I don't usually start it off that way because it's not an appropriate way. You bring up whatever point it is you want to communicate. And usually when you start a conversation, you want to start with things you agree on. You don't want to start with the point on which you're in disagreement. I don't think Michael is not a believer in passive investing. He's told me on more than one occasion, he advises his clients to change their stock allocations in response to price changes. So Michael is not a passive investor. Michael is a rational investor. He's not as much of a confirmed rational investor as I am. He doesn't have the distaste for passive investing that I possess, but it's more appropriate to call him a rational investor. He's certainly not a passive investor if he believes in changing allocations in response to prices. That's not passive investing. So, you know, I don't think Schroeder's right. I don't think Michael would agree with me. I don't think he would sign on to that statement. But, you know, I don't think he would sign on to the statement that passive investing is the only way to go either. Or the statement that passive investing is scientific investing. That's what a lot of passive investing advocates say. I don't think Michael would sign on to that. So there's all kinds of things he wouldn't sign on to. But what I like about Michael is he has his views and I have mine. We have some things we agree on totally and some things we disagree. But we're able to have conversations that are friendly and warm and civil. And that's where the goons get on the wrong track. But you know, the point of all that is passive investing. I often make these strong statements, and there's a reason why I do it. There's a strategic reason why I do it. I think many, many people, I've seen this, have doubts about passive investing. Doubts about passive investing have been present from the first day. It's a counterintuitive model. The idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices change on its face is an absurd idea. And many people see that, or at least on some level of consciousness. So people have always had doubts. But when prices got totally out of control, a lot of people buried their doubts. And they tried to pretend that they believed in passive investing more than they really did, because it became socially unacceptable to question passive investing. It became taboo. And I think what we need to do to get back to a better place is to have all the people who have doubts about passive investing state exactly what they believe. They shouldn't exaggerate what they believe. If they don't believe what I believe, that it's the biggest get-rich-quick scheme in history, they shouldn't say that. You should say what you believe. But they shouldn't diminish what they believe either. They should say it just as strong as they believe it. Nothing more, nothing less. And for me, that's posting honestly. That's what I mean. When I say that honest posting is banned at the retire early and indexing boards, what I mean is posters who believe in passive investing post honestly every day at these boards. Schroeder can post honestly. He believes in passive investing. It's not a problem. But there are hundreds of posters, possibly thousands in our communities, who do not believe in passive investing or who have serious doubts about it, and who squelch those doubts, who act as if they accepted passive investing more than they do. And I think that's the cause of all our troubles. And so I have made it a practice. I always try to be polite. I am always civil. Even my worst enemies acknowledge that. You know, they call it being passive aggressive, or they say I'm sickeningly sweet or something like that. But even my worst enemies will acknowledge that I'm civil and polite and warm, friendly to, you know, even to my worst critics, I'm friendly. They get angry. I say my friend Schroeder, he says, don't call me your friend. I'm not your friend. Well, you know, maybe I'm not his friend, but he's my friend. I'll choose my friends. And but while I am friendly and polite, I will not post dishonestly. If I believe that passive investing is the biggest get-rich-quick scheme in history, I will say just that. Because someone in the community has to say it. Because if I am permitted to say it, and I believe there will come a day when once again I will be permitted to post honestly at all retire early and indexing boards, when that day comes and there's someone in that community saying passive investing is the biggest get-rich-quick scheme in history, others who are not, you know, let's say, not as skilled at expressing themselves as I am. I don't mean that to brag. I just, you know, I'm making a point here. people who maybe feel a little uneasy, as I did when I started posting. I was very uneasy about posting, you know, on a public discussion board. Those people, if they see me saying that, they will feel free to say what they believe. And some will say it as strong as I do. Not too many, but some will. And others who just have doubts will say, well, I have my doubts. I'm not in Rob's camp, but I'm not in Mel Lindauer's camp. You know, I'm in the middle ground. I think Rob makes some good points. I think Mel makes some good points. And that's healthy. That's what we want to see. We want everyone posting their sincere views. And it's not going to happen until those who have strong anti-passive investing views work up the courage to say so. All right. That sounds like I'm getting off point, but not really. My point here, I'm trying to set this up by saying, whenever I make these strong anti-passive investing statements, I do believe them. I don't say it without thinking about it. But I always, it's hard to communicate, because what passive investing really is, what I will say is things like, oh, it's total nonsense. You know, the idea you don't need to change your stock allocation at times of insane prices is totally crazy. And it is. Considered in isolation, that statement is true. But, this is a big but, passive investing is 60% genius. It's the biggest get-rich-quick scheme that ever existed in reality. But 60% of it is the best investing approach ever developed by the human mind. Okay? Both things are true. Passive investing is the foundation. The principles of John Bogle are the foundation of rational investing, the approach I advocate. So passive investing is this model which has all this wonderful stuff at the bottom, the foundation. But then it has this layer of just insanity, the thing you're passive about, the idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices change. That is pure poison. And that's the thing I'm referring to when I say it's the biggest get-rich-quick scheme in history. The idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely high levels. Of course you need to change your stock allocation. To say you don't is like saying it's reasonable, because it's reasonable to drive your car at 70 miles per hour when the sun is out and it's a clear day, it's also reasonable to drive your car at 70 miles per hour when there's 3 inches of snow on the ground. That is insane. And that's what the quote-unquote experts have been telling us for 30 years now. The snow has been 3 inches thick on the highways from 1995 through the first part of 2008. And 90% of the investing experts have been telling us to just keep driving at 70. Don't change our stock allocation. It's irresponsible, dangerous, arrogant advice. So, but the problem I have in communicating is I want to make that point as strong as I can make it. I don't want to be compromising. I want you to know that it was insane advice. I want you to know how dangerous it is. I want you to learn the lesson. I want you never, ever, ever, ever again to fall for that, because you've lost real money, but you can make, you know, you can't make that money up. But if you start investing rationally today, you'll be getting some nice returns down the road, and that's the best you can do now. But if you continue investing passively, you're going to lose it all again. You know, there's a saying in a Bob Dylan song. He's got a new album, Telltale Signs, and it's the album I listen to when I have time. And he's got a line in there, very funny. Don't think you've lost everything. You can always lose a little more. You know, that sort of thing cracks me up. Don't think you've lost everything. You can always lose a little more. Well, that's a great saying for stock investors today. Don't think you've lost it all because you've lost 50% of your life savings. You can lose more, believe me. You stick with passive investing and you wait and see. You've got some big pain ahead of you. So when I try to make these points, I want to make it strong. I want to scare you to death about passive investing. I don't want to hold anything back, but I also want you to see the good of it. So my first answer to this question, when are stock losses true stock losses and when are they not? My first answer was, of course they're true stock losses. It's this idea that they're not losses is a pathetic attempt to rationalize them away. That's my first answer. But I have a more advanced answer, and I think a more true answer. And that is that there are circumstances in which it would be fair to say that the losses are not real unless you sell. Those circumstances do not apply on this last price crash. So the losses you've experienced are real, very, very real. They're totally real. But there are circumstances in which the passive investing claim would be legitimate, that those losses are not real unless you sell. And that's the point I want to make in this podcast. In order to be an effective investor, you have to know the two sets of circumstances. You have to know what circumstances you're in. So that's what I'm going to tell you. What determines which set of circumstances applies is, if you've listened to earlier podcasts, you can probably guess, the PE10 level. We're always talking about PE10 levels at passionsaving.com. The PE10 level is the valuation level for stocks. I say at the beginning of every podcast, I give the PE10 level, and in most of them, the PE10 level has been about 15, fair value. So then I follow that up with a statement. I say, stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. Could you suffer a 50% price drop from today's levels? Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, the odds are probably better than 50% that you're going to suffer a 50% loss from today's levels. Why do I say that? Because this is the fourth time in the history of the U.S. stock market that prices have gone to insanely high levels. We've tried this passive investing business before. The first three times, in all four occasions, investors have suffered bone-crushing losses. There are no exceptions in the historical record. But there is a difference in this fourth time that distinguishes it from the earlier three. In the earlier three, we didn't see a price drop down to fair value. We saw a price drop to 50% of fair value. We didn't go down to a P10 level of 15 where we are at today. We went down to a P10 level of 7 or 8, something in that neighborhood. So if you're going to go by the historical record, you should be expecting a price drop of 50% from today's levels. Won't necessarily happen in the next year. It could be we'll stabilize for 5 years and then we'll have a 50% drop. Could be we'll go up a little bit. Could be we'll go up to a P10 level of 20 and then we'll see a price drop of 70%. I don't know these details. But I know that there's a good chance we'll see a price drop of 50% from here. So why am I telling you? if I'm saying there's a better than 50% chance we're going to see a 50% price drop, why the heck am I telling you at the start of every podcast that stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition? Am I nuts? No. There's a good chance you're going to see a 50% price drop. But when stocks drop 50% from where they are today, the pressure for them to increase, they will then be at 50% of fair value. The market is always trying to push prices to fair value. Always. That's the most basic rule of investing. John Bogle called it an iron law of investing. It's like learning your ABCs. He calls it reversion to the mean. When prices are too high, a price crash becomes inevitable. When prices are too low, big price increases become inevitable. Unless the country, if we go into a depression and it's the end of the United States. You know, we the Depression leads to a world war and we're all dead. Well, obviously, then it doesn't happen. But presuming that our economy continues to function and we suffer a 50% price drop, we will then see a big increase in the years following. So that's why I don't say, when I say stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition, I'm not saying there isn't going to be a big price drop. I say long-term, it offers a strong long-term value proposition. Long-term, when I use the phrase, I'm talking about 10 years. So you might see a 50% price drop. We could have 5 years stable, then a 50% price drop, and then 5 years of gains. So at the end of 10 years, you'll have a nice return on your money for the total 10 years. An annualized real return of, say, 6% real. That's what you can expect. I can't give you exact numbers, but that's the neighborhood number you should be thinking, you should be planning on. So yes, there might be a 50% price drop, but it won't last long. So in that sense, this idea that a loss isn't real unless you lock it in is true. There's a lot of truth to it. It's real in the sense that you wish you didn't have to go through it, I suppose. But as long as you're going to get the money back within 10 years, does it really matter so much? I wouldn't say it's trivial, but I'd say it's not that big a deal. It's not that big a deal. Now contrast that with the 50% loss we suffered over the last 15 months. That money you're never going to see again. That's gone. Why is the one kind of loss not real, you get it back, and the other kind of loss permanent? The difference is that when you buy stocks at half of their fair value, you're getting a huge bargain. Or when you buy at fair value, you're getting a fair price. So that if you have a big loss, the money's going to come back to you within 10 years, probably. If you bought stocks at the prices that applied 15 months ago, these insanely high prices, most of your money wasn't going to the purchase of a share in the U.S. economy. 50% of your money was going to the purchase of cotton candy. Bogle calls it hot air. You know, just nothingness. So that's not coming back. We didn't lose anything real over the past 15 months. All we lost was this cotton candy nonsense. We bid prices up to insane levels in the 1990s. We borrowed from future returns. In 2000, starting in 2000, the bill came due. We only paid in dribs and drabs for 7-8 years. And now in the past 15 months, we paid the money back. Now we're back at even. We're back at fair value. But you're not going to get that money back. It's gone. It never existed. The right way to think about it is that it never existed in the first place. So, the answer to the question posed, this basic elementary question of stock investing, is there are times when stock losses are true losses, and there are times when they are not. When you purchase stocks that are overvalued, largely overvalued, not a little bit, but greatly overvalued, the losses you suffer are real. The money's gone. You did a foolish thing, you paid the consequence. But at times of fair value, that's not so. At times of fair value, it really is true that the stock losses are not real, that all you have to do is hold for a few years and the money will come back to you in not too long a time. So that's why investing today, buying stocks today, is a totally different value proposition from what was involved in buying stocks at an earlier, from 1995 through the first part of 2008. So that one distinction that I'm drawing here, do you see how it's so important? That's the distinction between passive investing, passive/emotional investing, and rational investing. Rational investing is investing for grown-ups. You know, I call it investing for humans, but you could call it investing for grown-ups. It's our understanding of how stock investing works is being developed over time. And we have the pre-Bogle era, when people tried to engage in short-term timing, which was a hopeless, futile quest. Then we had the Bogle era, which was half rational, half emotional. It was a mix. Great principles. You know, Bogle tells us ignore the short-term noise. That's great stuff, powerful stuff. But then he mixed in this poison. You know, it's sort of like, is it a good idea to drink a glass of milk? Well, a glass of milk has nutrients in it. It's a good thing. But if you pour some poison into it, it's no longer a good thing. Bogle came up with a nutritious approach to invest, but then he poured poison into it when he started telling people you don't need to change your stock allocation in response to insane price changes. That stuff is nuts. That stuff is dangerous and irresponsible. So, you know, it's always hard to say, what do you think of passive investing? Well, I hate the passive part of it. That's the part that causes all the human misery. But I like all that other stuff. I don't want us to go back to the pre-Bogle era, and I hear people suggesting that, and I sure don't want to see that. But, you know, I don't want us to lose Bogle's genuine insights either. Now, I'm going to take this to a third stage. You know, the first stage was maybe a fourth stage. I don't know how many stages there are, but let me just go through some of them, some different ways of thinking about it. One way to think about it is these losses are not real at all. And that's defensive thinking. To say that losses are never real is just kidding yourself. It's baby talk. It's goo-goo talk. You know, I'm sort of repulsed by it. A higher level of understanding is just to say, which is what the poster was saying, who started the thread, of course the losses are real. You're better off having the money, so the losses are real. So don't kid yourself. You know, face facts, buddy. Losses are real. Then there's a higher level of understanding. So that is a third stage. The higher level of understanding is losses sometimes are real and sometimes aren't, depending on the PE10 level that you made the purchase, at which you made the purchase. That's an advanced level. We can go to an even more advanced level. And this is, you know, this is nirvana. This is when you really become a grown-up. You really understand what stock investing is all about. And confidence just floods in on you. And you've truly escaped the emotional approach to investing, which Bogle started to escape. He's the first one who sort of took us a little bit out of the dark ages, but then didn't have the courage to really go to where we need to go to make it work in the real world. The super advanced stage, stage four, grown-up stage, nirvana, is to understand that not only are stock losses sometimes not real, as the passive investors claim. Passive investors say stock losses aren't real sometimes. Well, they say they're never real if you don't sell. But the third stage is to understand. Sometimes they're not real. The fourth stage, the highest stage, where I want to get you if I can, is sometimes losses aren't real. Guess what? Sometimes gains aren't real. That's grown-up investing. Where I want to take things is, just as losses sometimes are not real, depending on the PE10 level, sometimes gains are not real. So, if 12 months, we're now at a PE10 level of 15. Say that that's fair value. Say that 12 months from now, we're still at a PE10 level of 15. What will your situation be? Your situation will be you will have experienced stock gains of roughly 6.5%, and that will be real. If we stay at the same P10 level, you're experiencing gains. Why? Because the U.S. economy is sufficiently productive that it supports a gain for stock investors of roughly 6.5% a year, real. So if we stay at the same valuation level, you're earning that 6.5% return, and it's real. That's why I say stabilization of prices would be the best of all worlds. Now, what if we drop? What if we drop from 15 down to 10? Huge price drop. That would be a huge price drop. Be a price drop, I guess, roughly 35%. So, you know, people would be in agony a year from now if we're at a P10 level of 10. The truth is, it won't be as bad as people will be making out, because if we drop to 10 in the next year, that would mean in the following 10 years, we would almost certainly get back to 15 or something close to it. So, yes, in a temporary sense, you would have experienced a huge loss, but not in a long-term sense, not in a real sense. So you'd be making the money back. So it's no big deal. It's not really worth sweating over that much. So I'm telling you, those losses would not really be real. What if it goes the other way? What if we go from 15, which is fair value, to 20? Then that would mean that you would have experienced, you know, a huge gain. A huge gain. Is the gain real? No! The gain would be no more real than the loss would be real. You see, switching from passive investing, which is an emotional approach, to rational investing is coming to understand these things. It's coming to understand what is real and what is imaginary. That's the whole game. That's the stock investing game. And because we're human and our emotions govern us to a large extent, we are subject to falling for trickery. And what experts should be doing, in my view, is protecting us from trickery. They should always be trying to tell us the true story so that we are rooted in reality, and so that when prices change, we know, is this a real loss or not a real loss? Is it a real gain or not a real gain? You need to be able to distinguish the reality from the fantasy. The trouble we have is that most of the people who are quoted in the press as quote-unquote experts are in the stock selling industry, which means they have enormous financial pressures to mix in some of the poison with the good stuff. And so we're not getting the straight story from the experts, not by a long shot. And I, you know, we need to take a little responsibility for ourselves. We can't change the fact that these people have to sell stocks to stay in business. And, you know, they're not going to want to give the full story. But maybe, you know, we can stand up on our own and start to deliver the full story to ourselves. We can do a little research on our own and share what we learn with our community members, our fellow community members, and, you know, achieve a better level of understanding that way. If we go to a P10 level of 20, now, if we go to a P10 level of 20, does it mean you won't have experienced the 6.5% real gains? No. The 6.5% real gains, I said if we stayed at 15 for a year, you would have enjoyed a gain of 6.5%. Well, if we go to 20, that 6.5% real is still real. That doesn't go away just because we went to 20. But everything above that is phony. See, what you should be doing is when stocks were going up by 20%, 30%, these sick price gains that we were seeing in the late 1990s, you should have been discounting that every year. You should have been saying, you should have kept a separate set of books, you know, where you calculate how much were my real gains. My real gains were 6.5% real for this year. The rest of this that the papers are talking about, 30%, that's gibberish. And I'm not going to count on that. I'm going to adjust my portfolio statement. I'm going to put a big red X through that number that they're trying to trick me with. And I'm going to put in the real number so that I can plan my financial future, so that I know how much money I have, so that I know whether I can afford a new car or what kind of car I can afford, or, you know, what kind of vacation I can go on, or how close I am to retirement. If you don't know the numbers good luck trying to manage your money effectively. We need to know the right numbers. And, you know, anyone who believes in passive investing cannot give it to you. In Rob Bennett's opinion, please check it out. Don't believe it because I say it. I'm some guy who posts on the internet. Check it out. Check out if it makes sense. Check, follow the links I provide at the site. Check out what other people say. Try to figure it out. Check the historical data. Go to Robert Shiller's website. See if the data backs up what I say. The approach to investing that I describe, which I call rational investing. The gains we experienced in the late 1990s were not real gains. So, you know, this reveals this distinction between how passive investors deal with losses and gains. It reveals the game they're playing. Now, most of these people are not trying to trick you in an intentional sense. They're tricking themselves. And I think that's true of a lot of the experts. They're tricking themselves. But of course, the harm done to you is just as great, regardless of whether they're doing it intentionally or not. You still suffer the losses. But look at how they play the game. This guy that wrote this thread, he's responding to conventional passive investing wisdom, which is stock losses are not true losses. They're only losses if you sell, and passive investors never sell, so they're not true losses. Losses don't matter. That's what passive investors will tell you. But do they turn it around? Do they say gains don't matter? No. When they get a 30% gain, they start bragging about how smart they are. The house that Jack built. This is Taylor Larimore, co-author of The Boglehead's Guide to Investing. He made a lot of money during the sick bull years. And he was able to buy a vacation home, and he calls it the house that Jack built. Now, because he's stuck at the same stock allocation when prices were insane, he's lost a lot of money, and he told us a week or two ago he's got a plan B that he's never told us about until now. Plan B is sell all his stocks and go to zero stock allocation. That's plan B. That's what happens to passive investors when reality hits them square in the face. His losses are real. He's been telling people for 10 years, losses aren't real unless you sell. So now he's experienced losses. What's his plan B? Sell. Sell everything. Lock in the losses. Make sense? Does not make sense. Not make sense. But that's passive investing. That's how it works. Every passive investor has a plan B. They won't. Taylor's just being upfront about it. I don't mean to pick on Taylor. He's telling us he's got a plan B. He didn't tell us for 10 years. He didn't tell us in his book. But now he's telling us. But he's ahead of the curve. I think all passive investors are going to end up having a plan B somewhere down the road. They're all going to sell. Because this investing approach leads to such bone-crushing losses that no middle-class in person can get through it without selling at some point. The lucky ones are the ones who give up soon, like Taylor, and they sell. At least they sell. You know, they're not selling at the top, to be sure, but at least they're selling before they lose everything. But the rational investors don't have that problem because the rational investors are, you know, rational. That's the idea. They know how much of the money is real. They know when the losses are real. They know when the gains are real. They're tied into the reality principle. When you're tied into the reality principle, you don't panic when reality hits you in the face because you were expecting it. It makes all the difference in the world. So if you discounted those gains in the late 1990s, none of this comes as a shock. You understood. If you were discounting it on your books, then you knew that it was all a game, that we were borrowing money from the future, and that we were going to have to pay it back. And none of this came as the least bit of a surprise. And if it's not a surprise, it doesn't cause panic, does it? That's the key to successful long-term stock investing. In Rob Bennett's opinion, the answer to the poster's question is, some losses are real, some losses are not. It depends on the P10 level at which you made the purchase of the stocks. But that's the advanced understanding. And an even more advanced understanding is when you understand that some gains are real and some gains are not. Passive investors want to look only at, they only want to say losses aren't real. But gains, oh, gains are real to them. You know, how convenient, as Church Lady would say. It gives the whole game away when you see that lack of balance. That's what tells you that this whole philosophy is a get-rich-quick scheme. What's going on is our emotions want us to be in stocks when prices are dangerous. We've all got it inside us. And passive investing gives us an excuse. It says, hey, gains are real, but losses aren't real. Sure, you should put all your money in stocks, no matter how dangerous they are. Sure, you should. Stocks for the long run, timing doesn't work. Reality says stocks are sometimes best for the long run and sometimes not. Reality says some forms of market timing don't work. Some forms of market timing are required. The kind of market timing that's required is the kind that says you must lower your stock allocation when prices go to truly insane, sick levels. Good luck with your investing strategies.